Welcome to the History Chicks. This is Beckett. If you're a first-time listener, we're so glad you found us. This episode, which was recorded at the end of 2010, was the very first time either of us had been in front of a microphone. We have debated for years whether to re-record or remaster or just get rid of this episode entirely. But until we find the time to do so, we're keeping Marie Antoinette and her story up out of nostalgia or maybe just inertia. Please forgive the sound quality on this one. We definitely get more skilled as the years go on. Thanks for understanding, and thanks for listening. And now, on with the show.
Welcome to the History Chicks, where any resemblance to a boring old history lesson is purely coincidental.
And here's your 30-second summary. Princess born with a silver spoon in her mouth travels to France to marry a boy with a gold crown on his head. She spends quite a lot of money on jewels and then meets up with a steel blade. The end.
Let's talk about Marie Antoinette. Maria Antonia Josepha Joanna, there's a mouthful, was born in 1755. The same year that she was born, Samuel Johnson, his first dictionary, was published. During her lifetime, the American Revolution would occur. She actually would meet Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and also during her lifetime, Jane Austen was born. So that should give you an idea of where she fits in history.
Welcome to the show. Today's subject is a woman that most people in the world know only two things about.
Mm-hmm.
What do they know about her?
They know that she had a fabulous fashion sense and...
Oh, I was going to say they know she got her head cut off.
Oh, yes, those are the two things.
Okay, well then there's three things.
What's the other thing?
Let them eat cake.
Oh, the cake! Of course.
Okay, so there's three things. All right, amended already. That's fabulous. First, a little family history. Marie Antoinette was born in 1755 into the Habsburg Empire. Her mother, Maria Therese, was the ruler, along with her husband, King Francis, of an empire that stretched really from the edge of France all through present-day Austria, Hungary, the Ukraine, and parts of Poland, and part of Romania.
That's a big chunk of landscape.
It is. It was called the Holy Roman Empire, and through a series of clever intermarriages, that'll be a theme for later, they seized more and more land. I mean, legitimately seized it, but they added it to their empire. This thing started in 1278, so her family has been powerful in Europe for hundreds of years. And they are known for marrying strategically to increase their interests. And Maria Therese was no slouch in marrying her children off to the appropriate people to ensure that kept going. So her family was equally as powerful as Louis's family, turns out. So it was an alliance of equals. And in the family, everyone spoke French within the court. It was considered the refined language for everyone to speak. And, therefore, since all the girls were named Maria after the Virgin Mary to show their devotion to the Catholic faith.
Very nice.
Yes. Their middle names were what everyone was known by in the family. And those were, how shall I say, Frenchificated?
Frenchificated.
So, in
the purest sense, of course.
Oh, my goodness. So Maria Antonia became Antoine within the family, and her slightly older sister, Carolina, became Charlotte within the family. And once the girls married, of course, the language of their husband's courts would determine what they would be known by. Similar to the way that Kate Middleton will be known as Queen Catherine. It is up to the reigning monarch what you'll be known as. She'll be known as Princess Catherine.
Princess Catherine, right.
Rather than Kate.
So Antoine became Antoinette.
And then the Maria was Frenchified to Marie.
Marie,
so that is
right.
Why we know her as Marie Antoinette. So they had 16 children, which is a lot. You'd think she wouldn't have time to be...
I know,
16
manipulating
children.
And ruling. And
she did, however, send people out of the room when she was actually in labor, which was good.
Unusual for the time.
But she worked in bed while she was, at least when she was having Marie Antoinette. And by 15, you're probably like, yeah, I know how long this takes, like looking at your watch, like right. Whatever. Yeah, but she was actually working at her papers at the same time she was in labor. I don't know.
Kind of this modern day image of a working woman
in the hospital bed with her laptop and her BlackBerry.
And so how much attention do you think a 15th child ever gets, really?
Very little.
Even, I have this picture. Here, I'll share this picture. Okay, even here, when they only have 11 children. And well, I'll put a link to this on our show notes. Okay, the first few children are right next to their parents.
Very important.
Very important. Painted full size. And then, seriously, you get to child number 6, and they are faded out.
Tucked in the background.
Completely in the background. Like, just, I don't even know, do they even look like the people? Probably. They're not.
It's like a stable, waiting. They're just waiting, you know.
Yeah, it's like they're
in case they need to get...
Yeah. They're in the mist. Yep. They're in the mist. And this is only when there's 11. So by the time you get to 15.
Poor Antonia.
Yeah. Antonia was her name. And every single one of these sisters has the first name Maria.
Maria. Which totally confuses. Yeah.
And then when we get to France, they're all Louis.
Oh, they're all Louis.
We should set out a convention now that when we get to Louis, we're going to call. Ooh, the purists are going to hate this. We're going to call King Louis Grandpa King.
Well, she called him Papa, right?
Yeah, Grandpa, Grandfather King.
Right.
Yeah. So we're going to call him Grandfather King. We're going to call Louis, the husband of Marie Antoinette, we're going to call him Louis. And then the son, Louis, is going to be Baby Louis.
Baby Louis!
So this family was surprisingly prolific, given, you know, the rate. Did you say, what did you say that the mortality rate was?
Yeah, the closest I could find was 190 deaths to every 1,000 live births.
See, that's so high.
It is.
Oh, my goodness. And just think about how emotionally wrenching that is. I don't know.
To carry a child for all that time. Not only that, you physically carry them, but in this situation with the royal families, they have plans for them, and it's important for the future of their countries that they produce these children.
That is a good point, because with so many children, Maria Therese, that is Marie Antoinette's mother, had a lot of pawns to put in play with the alliances game. And the thing about alliances, especially when it comes to princesses, is they're kind of like hostages and ambassadors at the same time.
Dual roles. There were all the little archdukes and archduchesses.
Seems hard to say.
Running around the palace.
And they grew up at Schönbrunn Palace, which is just beautiful. I'll have to put a picture of that up. Marie Antoinette often recalled her childhood in this place. There, fountains, menageries. Honestly, there was a serious lack of formality, given the courts of the day, requirements for what one had to wear at court. I mean, you know.
Much different minimal requirements than we have now.
Oh, yes.
Shirts, shoes, no service. It was a little bit more. But
yes, so. Considerably more clothes. But it wasn't so regimented as other courts. Also, the children were encouraged to play with and talk to commoners. And there was a great emphasis on merit rather than inheritance or rank.
Because of where you were born.
Because you were born.
What you did.
Now, I mean, nobility was important, don't get me wrong, but there was a chance. You had a chance in this court to be recognized due to merit. In war, in the arts, the Austrian royal family was a great patron of the arts as well. In fact, Mozart famously came to that
court. Yes, Mozart was hung around with them quite a bit.
And when he was a small child, he came and here's the rumor, and I don't even think this is really true, but it's a pretty charming story, that once upon a time, he kissed Marie Antoinette and asked her to marry him when they were both small children. So even if that's not true, I'm going to pretend it's true because
yes,
it's such a charming story.
It is.
This court was so informal, and she grew up, you know, wandering the grounds and everything, and being the 15th child, I think she didn't get a lot of attention from her parents.
No.
In the upbringing, she wasn't under her mother's eye. In fact, she was deathly afraid of her mother. That's what she described it as later.
She's actually very wise.
Well, yeah, there was like, you know, rather than being excited when your mommy comes home from work,
yeah,
it was
right.
Like your mother has summoned you. Yeah, and there's, you know, then you have to change your clothes
Terror.
And go see your mother. So this isn't a very casual relationship. That said, they did hire the best tutors for the younger children, or so they thought. But the tutors, who were deathly afraid of Maria Therese, when working with this child who did not pay attention, who did not attend to her lessons, and who did not really show too much intellectual promise at all, I hate to say, often would write
her compositions themselves rather than get in trouble.
And pass them off as her work. Mm-hmm. And then later in life, of course, she got bitter in the royal tushy.
Yeah, and the court spoke French, this court. That said, though, they didn't speak court French or French. In fact, they spoke French with a lot of Germanisms.
Right, and a German accent, obviously.
Yeah, like the Spanglish of its day.
Exactly.
Kind of. It's like, oh my goodness. And so, yeah, later that comes to bite them in the booty, too. Now, Marie Antoinette was not necessarily destined for the court of France. In fact, she really hadn't been thought of at all. She was too young. She was not even in play at this point, although, you know, that was always going to be her future. There was a disastrous series of events in which two of her sisters, in fact, in a short period of time, died of smallpox. But in particular, it was died first of smallpox, and then Josepha was due to marry the King Ferdinand of Naples. And she was seriously ready to go. The carriages were ready. The situation was planned. The contract was signed. And she died.
On her way.
Right before she was to go.
Right.
That made for an uncomfortable situation. I mean, in addition to mourning your sister and your daughter, okay, the King of Naples is expecting a royal bride. And I don't think he really cares who, because it's an alliance thing. So she, Maria Therese, had two daughters available at the time. Amalia, who was 5 years older than the bridegroom in question.
Oh, right.
And they had Carolina, who was younger. And the king was not to be fobbed off with some old bride. Old, like whatever.
Yeah.
She's like 22. And so he chose the younger. Now, the younger had been thought of to go to France. Carolina, always in the back of her mother's mind, was of an age of the princes of France. Mm-hmm. And had always kind of vaguely been thought of and such. And I'm presuming to think that Carolina thought she was going there too, really.
Sure. I mean, because it would make sense.
Yeah, it would make sense.
And Carolina and Antoine at the time, mm-hmm. they were very close.
Very close.
Close in age, what, 3 years apart, mm-hmm. and they were raised together. They were playmates. They were sisters. And it would set the tone for her future relationships with women.
Yeah.
Which is something I think is interesting.
Yeah, it is. Well, and also, one of her older sisters got to marry the person she fell in love with, who did not have a high enough rank to marry an archduchess. She was her mother's favorite. She shared a birthday with her mother. Can you imagine if you're raised to know that you have to marry a total stranger and then your sister just breezes by and marries whoever she wants?
That's right.
That's, like, offensive to you. I mean, forget, like, she had the best.
I'm going to marry this guy. Isn't he hot?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And so the other sisters were very resentful of this. Now, with this cloud of resentment having happened, okay, so here's Carolina in the back of her mind thinking she might be going to become the Queen of France. I mean, you know, until your mother says, you know, anything's possible.
Until things happen.
France and Austria had been enemies for years and years and years and years and years. So there may be nobody marrying in the French house.
Right.
They could marry a house of, you know, somebody from the House of Savoy. It could be anybody. But, you know, there was this, and then instead you have to go marry a fat, stinky, no bath taken, horrible guy in Naples. Okay, see you later. And she cried and wept and railed against this thing. And, you know, it wasn't a matter of, like...
Didn't matter.
No. This was alliances. Yes. This had nothing to do with it. You know, Naples wants a princess they shall have. Goodbye. Here's your carriage. She cried the whole way. It was noted at the time that she looked back all the time, like, until she couldn't see her house anymore, out the window, like, looked at the house that she would never see again. Can you imagine?
No, I can't.
And you have a daughter about that age.
I do.
Can you imagine?
Now, we're talking about Carolina, or...
Carolina.
Yes.
Yeah, and she...
Because Marie was similar, mm-hmm. you know, when she was Marie Antoinette, because all Maries.
Now, one of her sisters, Elizabeth, the most beautiful one in the family, everyone said it, everyone, who, like, basically lived on flirting and, you know, the guards thought she was cute and blah, 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 vain, vanity, 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 got smallpox, got completely disfigured, and was ruthlessly eliminated from the marriage market. But once upon a time, they had thought to marry her to Grandpa King.
Ew.
I know. But once again, doesn't matter.
Yeah, you doesn't matter. No. It's,
you know, your inclinations as a person, not considered at all.
You know, as a parent, even at the age of my children, my oldest daughter is 14, I still think how great would it be if she married the son of a friend of mine?
You know,
and that's just me being selfish because our families would blend perfectly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that would be me saying, okay, arranged marriages would be kind of cool, but this is an entirely different climate. We can't even begin to relate to what type of, you know, the political aspect of the...
I just couldn't bear to see my child, like, weeping. Like, I'll never see her again. And she, like, is weeping at her fate. Like, that I have made for her.
I know. Oh. Well, inside, I'm doing a happy dance because, yay, my plan is finally coming to fruition that my daughter is marrying this into this royal house and will be a part of the process. And, yay, that my purpose in life is being fulfilled. So, bye, darling. I love you so much. Booyah!
Please write.
You know. See you later.
So what you're left with is, you know, you turn around and, like, you're at the end of the line. I mean, you have a small son. You're small. You know, he's, like, 13, 14. You have a daughter. The last daughter. That's your last pawn. And then you have another son after that. But, like, the sons are going to stay, you know, in your country. And you bring people in to become alliances with that. But the last pawn you have to play with France is Marie Antoinette. And all of a sudden, some interest had to be paid because they found out about her education at that point.
Right. But she did have some qualities that she did bring to the table naturally. She was very graceful.
She was
considered beautiful in an unusual way, but...
And extremely sweet. Very gentle. She was known as this sweet Antoine in the family. She was the pet. She was the littlest girl. The brothers and sisters, you know, she was very sweet. She wasn't aggressive or assertive like her other sisters.
Right.
She didn't take after her mother at all in that regard.
And I think that this might be one of those situations where she, over history, it's false. You know, you think of her as being, just the whole let them eat cake issue.
Oof.
But, you know, just being royal and strong and, you know, you don't think of the sweet side of her. And that's, she's this sweet girl who gets used for political gain, as was expected. It was the way things worked then. So she might have been, in some regards, a victim of the social media of her day.
Oh, I'm 100% sure.
But we'll talk about that later.
On that later.
Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will start to talk about Marie Antoinette's new life, becoming the Dauphine of France.
Back with Marie Antoinette, who has just been contracted to marry the grandson of Louis XV.
Now, contracted is a very good word.
Contracted.
Yes.
It was just nothing more than a contract.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it was the luck of the draw.
Yes.
Most of the time you did not get a good draw. Before she was to go, when her mother found out about her excessively poor education, they hired some actors to teach her French, because really the language they spoke was French in Germany, but it was really,
it was Germanized.
Very Germanized. When the French found out that actors had been hired.
Gasp!
And so, you know, here's Austria like, retool, and they hired a priest.
Of course.
Which pleased France. But that is, I think, the difference between France and Austria, is the Austrians thought it was perfectly acceptable to hire actors.
Of course, why wouldn't it be? They speak for a living.
Yeah, but the French are like all, And then the French had an issue because Marie Antoinette's teeth weren't straight.
Yes!
Like, really, people? Really. All right.
Have we seen the Louis she's going to go marry?
Oh, my gosh. So,
physically not a prize, but...
Oh, my gosh. So, they had this guy had made... I have to assume it's, like, those Invisalign things, and it's called a pelican, and it's, like, wires and hardware.
17th century orthodontia.
Oh, my gosh. 3 months is all it took, so you know it was, like, violent.
I know. It had to be painful.
I can imagine her, like, crying.
The beauty was pain back... I mean, it is now to some regard, but back then...
Corsetry alone.
Oh, my.
Man, I should put links to that up, too. Okay, so after the,
links to the corsets?
Yeah, might as well.
Yeah.
You know.
I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
Go on.
There's a really good website called The Costumer's Manifesto. Mm-hmm. I'll have to put a link to that. It actually would go with every single podcast we ever do.
Absolutely.
Because I cannot believe how thorough that website is about costumery, mm-hmm. undergarments, mm-hmm. just the sheer weight of the garments everyone wore.
Right. And I think this would be a good time to give a shout out to all the wonderful websites for Marie Antoinette. Because really, and we will discover this with every single person that we discuss here, there is a subculture for everyone. There mm-hmm. are people who are probably listening right now that are saying, tell me something I don't know, because they know quite a bit. But they're extremely fascinated by her, and I just think those people should really, I would just like to say, thanks for making it to minute whatever.
Before she went, she had to be married by proxy, and what that would do was entitle the bride to travel with her new rank and all the privileges.
Heretofore.
Yes. And so that's such a strange idea, and they took it very seriously. Her slightly older brother, Ferdinand, was her proxy husband.
Yes.
I'm talking they had a church wedding. He stood beside her. There was a priest. Reception for 1,500 people. Dinner, dancing, 2 days of festivities as if it were a real wedding. But it was Ferdinand, her brother.
Her brother.
I believe they did do that thing where you would ceremonially put them in bed together and walk away, you know, but
oh,
of course,
yeah,
nothing
well,
happened, obviously, but I believe they took it that far.
Prophetic.
Oh, that's, yes. Goodness, we'll get to that here in a minute, but... the handover, which you will actually see pretty accurately in Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette.
Yes.
The handover, she shows up on the banks of a river. There is a tent erected right on the border.
Exactly.
With a red table in the center to mark, you know, you are now in France, you are now in Austria. And she goes in on the Austrian side, says goodbye to everyone she's come with, except for Ambassador Mercy, who stays with her. He's the only one allowed to go ahead, because he's the ambassador to the foreign court. Everyone else, including her dog...
Her dog.
...has to go behind.
Yes, that whole scene in that movie is very... touching. You're like, my dog!
Yeah. Well, and she is a child. She's 14 years old. But, you know, she recovered, and she knew what was expected of her. She recovered immediately.
Right.
It got her game face back on. Yeah, but that was still sad. Now, and it was true. They stripped
her.
Everything off of her. Now, of course, it seems horrifying now, but really, the expectation of privacy in those days was not
what it is today.
No.
And she was going very similar to our current screening methods. She was stripped down to nothing at the border.
TSA?
Yes, that's right. but her face was not blurred out, and the image was not... It was burned into the retinas and memory banks of everyone that was there. But she was comfortable with it because that's how she was dressing in front of people her whole life.
Yeah. And the sheer logistics to get her there. This is one teenage girl. There's 53 carriages. So you're looking at hundreds of horses to pull mm-hmm. the carriages, and there's outriders on mm-hmm. horses. Okay, horses need to eat stuff.
People
need
to
eat
stuff. They need to sleep somewhere.
You know, you can't just sit in a carriage all day. You just can't. There needs to be walking about. I mean, the logistics of this thing just boggles the mind.
Yeah, you can't plan a trip like that at Expedia.
Yeah. No way. And so, so after all this, only one of the carriages proceeded on because she was met by some French court carriages and everyone else, I believe, turned back.
They went back, right.
Here she proceeds in the carriage, alone with her ambassador, all the way, and they decided to make...
Now wearing French garments.
Now wearing French garments, French mm-hmm. makeup, which actually her... brother from Austria later really mocked her. The rouge situation looked like everyone had a fever.
Yes. For many countries, it was considered garish, but in Versailles, it was
the high of fashion.
Exactly.
And if you could not afford rouge, which many could not, people would use red wine to achieve the same look. Even peasant women. I mean, they're putting red wine on their cheeks.
Yeah.
Like Benetint.
Should we get some red wine and try it?
Oh, I just don't know.
No.
And I know what it does to your teeth in photographs, so I'm not really sure I'd want
to put all that.
It's not good.
No. And just circles.
Yeah, just circles.
And
like wax dolls, really, is what they look like. The meeting between Marie Antoinette and Louis XVI her future husband, or really current husband. They've been married by proxy, but, right. you know, they still need to submit it with an actual wedding. Not auspicious at all, but they decided to move it to the forest outside of Versailles for a little private meeting where they could meet the king, where they could, you know, meet for the first time, not under the eyes of all the people.
Except for all the people that were there.
Yeah. The royal family was really all that were there, and the servants of such. He was fat. He was uncomfortable in his outfit. He didn't know how to talk. He was not very full of conversation. He had two handsomer brothers. One was very handsome, but that wasn't the one she got.
No.
Because he's a younger son. She got the awkward one. The one that was very bookish. And here,
big hunter.
Yeah, the big hunter.
He kept a journal, and it was his journal was his hunting excavates. Mm-hmm.
And all he said of this day, this whole day in his journal, is meeting with the Dauphine.
That's it.
That's it. No commentary. That's do not know his feelings on the subject at all. So I don't think we can go that deep.
Yeah, no. she'll do.
And this child, his whole upbringing had been brought up to distrust Austrians, to think that they were manipulative, to think they were the enemy, because they were, up until very recently. And so here he is, you know, with Austrian wife.
And all this preset prejudices against her.
Serious prejudice against her. She's going to try to manipulate you.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just not in her nature. No.
She's just saying, oh, my husband.
She's probably just sighing, like, okay.
All right, that's him.
This is how it goes.
Nope. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I know what I got to do now.
Oh, yeah. But
sure
did she? Okay.
Yeah.
So, as a Dauphine, she did get married the very next day in a ceremony with her actual husband.
The real guy.
The real guy. And they did that old tried and true ceremony where thousands of eyes, no, I lie, like tens of eyes, look at you get into bed with your husband for the first time at 14.
Mm-hmm. And she gets into bed that night with all these people around them.
Mm-hmm.
Wishing them well.
No, I do, yeah. Good luck and good work, yeah. He says in the movie. Oh, my gosh. Even good your work. Grandpa tells
good
you,
work.
Okay.
Yes. Good work.
See you tomorrow, grandson.
Yeah.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
We know what you're going to do.
So the thing is, nothing happened that night. And
the next night.
Or many nights. It took seven
years. Can you imagine? I mean, nowadays, you know, some brides barely make it out of the church before the wedding's consummated. Sexist.
Are you talking about, like, in the limo?
Of course, well, they don't show that on those wedding shoes.
No, they don't show that. And they certainly don't show what happened to Marie Antoinette, because, honestly, it's really kind of boring. And there are several theories as to why it happened. One theory is that he had something wrong with his apparatus. There was a condition that they thought he suffered from that caused it to be painful. To do so. Some other scholars think that it was just a function of his personality. Very shy, very unfit to rule, frankly, not decisive in any way. And here, since...
And a kid.
Yeah, and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's young.
And here he's got this grandpa that's the ladies' man and very powerful and accustomed to rule, and he's in this guy's shadow anyway. And he's so shy, and he has to leave his room, walk down the hall with everybody knowing his business, what he's going to try to do, down to her room. There's servants there. There's people there. You have to get out of there. It's just really, he's so shy, and he doesn't know what to do, and who does he ask? And it's just not a good combination.
And quite frankly, without being crude.
And he's just afraid. I just think it has a lot to do with...
That will definitely slow down the process.
And though Marie Antoinette was raised as a princess, who knows the duty is to have an heir, that doesn't mean she knew exactly what that meant, really.
True.
And she's, you know, been told she's the one that listened when her mom told her to submit to her husband's will and this and that. And no one else listened, and they just went on with business. But so here she is, just kind of waiting for him to
submit
to
his will. And his will is not the will of the people, or specifically her mother.
Her mother wrote her letter after letter after letter blaming her for this thing. Access to Versailles was very public, and wives, the fishwives, you know, anyone could come in if they were respectably dressed, would yell at her in the hallway. When are you going to produce an heir for us? Everyone thought it was her fault, and it's not her fault. And there's, you know, I can't imagine being in that position.
No. Just being in it is one thing, and then having Mommy Dearest writing you letters through other people, because she dictated them to her secretary, so that's two people that know what's in the letter.
Oh, and then, you know.
Who knows who else is witness.
And her ambassador. Mm-hmm. This poor man has to, like, tell her, you know, you need to encourage your husband to, hello. And, you know, oh, what an uncomfortable position for him to be in. But since there was no queen in France, and hadn't been for a long time, and so there's no middle generation, Louis the 16th's mother had died, Louis was not married.
Grandpa King
was not married. Immediately upon her marriage, Marie Antoinette became the highest-ranking woman in the country. Everyone had to bow to her. No one could speak to her unless she spoke first.
Because there was a lot of rules in Versailles.
The Sun King, way back in the day, we'll talk about this
later. About 100 years before.
Yeah. Versailles was originally a hunting lodge, and the king at that time moved out of town in order to basically pursue his country pursuits and basically to limit the access of courtiers because there wasn't room for the retinue that there was everywhere else.
The retinue.
And it started out as a country retreat, but it slowly turned into a bastion of formality. And I guess he thought keeping the courtiers fighting over who got to hold his candle mm-hmm. or his underwear or whatever would keep them from fighting about things like, you know, land, the crown, and it worked like
a
charm.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's a brilliant strategy in some regards.
Yeah, it's a brilliant strategy.
And especially, you know, I would like to have people holding my candle.
Fighting
Although, I don't know how crazy I would have been to being poor Marie Antoinette and having to wait bare naked while the hierarchy of women in her room decide who is the highest ranking to slip her dressing gown on, you know, waiting. Yeah. Those places couldn't have been well heated.
Oh, no.
All that marble. I mean, it was cold.
And that really, I hate to refer again to Sofia Coppola's movie. That's actually depicted in the movie. That's something that actually happened.
Yes.
She's standing there shivering naked while everyone lee-laws around and takes off the gloves and does the curtsies and
goes through the whole procedure of the proper procedures of dressing her, mm-hmm. only to have somebody else come in the room who is of a higher rank.
And take over.
And have to do it all over again.
Well, this whole thing, Marie Antoinette was raised very, I would say religious, very calmly. Even though her dad was a notorious playboy, the children really didn't see that side of him. And so here she is. I guess I liken it to an innocent small-town girl from, you know, Squirrel Hollow, Arkansas, getting dropped in the middle of Vegas. Okay, you know, do your thing, you know.
Yeah.
Everything was kind of shocking.
It looked familiar because people are people.
Yeah.
But it was so off color from anything that she had known that it was.
Yeah, just the backbiting and King Louis, oh, goodness. Husband Louis had some aunts that had never married and never left, three of them, and they immediately set about in their mischievous ways manipulating Marie Antoinette into dissing the king, Grandpa King's mistress, which you can kind of see as probably a bad plan.
Yes.
If
he's close enough to this woman to have a mistress from not quite noble upbringing.
Oh, yeah.
She married someone to get a title,
mm-hmm.
and then he sent the husband off.
Yeah, it was a business deal. Hey, you know, marry my mistress, give her a title of comtesse, and I'll give you this land, and you mm-hmm. get out of town. You know, the guy took the deal. Like, okay, that's cool. I'm out. And so she has a title, but she is very low ranking, very low. I mean, I'd say peasant low. The daughters of the king really thought she was so far beneath their father, and they immediately set about turning Marie Antoinette against her. And that really turned out to be a political misstep, I think, for a while. And eventually she was kind of forced to talk to her. That shows her in the movie, too. This active campaigning. Please talk to the mistress of the king. Please, please, please. And finally she said, there are a lot of people at Versailles today.
That's it.
That's all she said. But it opened, I mean, so from then on, Madame du Barry could talk. And they actually did have a better relationship later, which is not depicted in the movie. I mean, they weren't like BFFs or anything, but they did actually speak in the hall and were cordial and had some tea together and this and that. And the aunts realized that I think the game was up, that their manipulative powers had had ended in that way. But, you know,
But to have this young girl come in, why wouldn't they play with her?
The court was very fond of gambling, even before the king. You know, gambling was king. And the drinking, and the gambling. The young people were really fond of these pursuits, and they had no responsibility.
Right, so why wouldn't they be?
Yeah, and it got worse.
They didn't have Facebook yet, so.
Oh, my goodness. Wouldn't you love to see that?
Oh, yes, all the statuses.
Yeah.
She still hasn't done it.
So she,
Year
got...
Six.
Year six. Year seven. Oh, yes. How did that get fixed? Well, it doesn't get fixed yet. I'll tell you later. She actually became the queen quite young. She was 19 when Grandpa King succumbed and died. And her husband became king at a very young age, fell to his knees and said, basically, God help us, we are too young to reign. And he became the king immediately. And really, he became the victim of his advisors.
Mm-hmm.
Notoriously indecisive. Notoriously easy to manipulate for those older men around him. He was not a powerful king at all. Still, marriage unconsummated. Marie Antoinette, once she became queen, refused to dine in public. Really, she would sit there and toy with her food while, you know, her husband just tucked in.
But the people were watching. It wasn't like they were sitting having their own dinner, like in a restaurant now.
They were on a stage.
They were just, yeah, that was it. That was the entertainment, is watching the king and queen go to town on a stuffed pheasant or the many courses of dinner.
She was very uncomfortable doing that, and it was seen as haughty, actually, by the people who came to visit Versailles. Not shy. It was shy. She was just shy. But it was seen as very haughty.
One of the perks Marie Antoinette had by becoming queen was the fact that she could rearrange her own household. So no longer did the old ladies who had run it before have sway over everything. She was able to raise her friend Princess de Lamballe, who was very angelic and very good, and married into a legitimized princely house. So she's related to Grandpa King through marriage. And also the Duchess de Polignac, who was in that circle, but was very fast, was very, very Versailles, in fact.
Very Versailles.
Very naughty.
How very Versailles of you.
Yeah, she was always encouraging Marie Antoinette to, you know, be a little crazier, gamble more, drink more, let a little loose. And so it might have been a really good balance, but those were really her best friends.
Almost like an angel and a devil on your shoulder.
Exactly.
And those were her besties, and why wouldn't she put them in the closest to her life, having the most access to her life,
yeah,
the people she trusted, and
she eventually, Princess de Lamballe came back, much to her detriment,
yes,
and we'll talk about that later, and faced her fate with the revolutionaries, and then the Duchess de Polignac did not, in fact, come back. She succumbed to what most people believe is uterine cancer and could not come back. So her best friends didn't end well, but during her life,
they showed loyalty.
They showed
loyalty. I mean, to come back while she was in prison, yeah, total loyalty.
So sadly, they'll come up over and over in this history.
I actually am starting to think that all the drinking and gambling, which escalated greatly during the first years of the reign, and kind of added to her reputation, when she first got there, she was very popular with the people. But it started.
And she did some very kind things.
Yeah, she did.
With just out and about, stopping her carriage to help a wounded man. And
yes, definitely. And she gave money to a young peasant boy, not going as far as to adopt him, but basically paid to have him raised in greater circumstances. She gave lots of money to charities. She had some pet charities. Mostly to do with mothers and children. Mm-hmm.
She was very fond of children. I mean, being young herself, obviously, you know, she would want to have this marriage consummated. I mean, her and have children.
Once upon
a time, we're hung up on this consummated thing. How is that even possible?
Oh, I know. Well, and you know, finally, Maria Therese, back in Austria.
Mom.
Freaked out and sent, at this time, her co-regent, her oldest son, sent him to Austria. Find out what's wrong. Fix it. This cannot happen because really an unconsummated royal marriage meant at any moment, for no apparent reason, King Louis, Grandpa King, could have sent her back.
Right.
And her current husband can send her back now. If they haven't consummated it, it's not a binding marriage.
Right.
She could go back like snap. Right. He gets sick of her, he falls in love with someone else, another country comes along and has a princess to throw in the mix.
Right. They needed more power from
They needed to close the deal. And so brother comes along, has some talks with Louis.
Right. About brother-in-law to brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As only men can do.
And I'm assuming they were pretty frank, because almost immediately, Marie Antoinette was pregnant.
It worked.
So that's good. Sometimes, I mean, really, maybe he just needed someone to tell him what to do.
Right.
I don't know.
Or likened it to things that he understood, like animals.
Yes. Or, as it shows in the movie, he was very fond of locks and keys. And
oh, yes, that's right.
They had a lock and key
Lock and key discussion. Yes.
We'll never know because they didn't write it down, but I'm assuming. So the birth of her daughter, it was a daughter, first of all, which was, you know, probably not what the country wanted, but.
I know, waiting 7 years, she's finally pregnant. They're like, give us an heir! Not exactly.
Just a girl. But Marie Antoinette was thrilled and had said that this daughter, had she been a boy, would belong to the country, but as it was a daughter, it belonged to her. Was able to keep her. Yeah. She was a notoriously, they called her an indulgent mother because she wanted to be with her child all the time. And unlike, it was a hereditary post to be governess to the children of France. Now, fit to raise children? Not even considered. It was a hereditary post. And when that governor of the children eventually went bankrupt and had to quit, Marie Antoinette got more vitriol heaped upon her by basically nominating her best friend, or one of her best friends, the Duchess de Polignac, who had children, to be the governor of the royal children. So bypassing who should have had the post in the first place. So the nobles are starting to turn against her, too. Like, wait, you can't keep giving these jobs to your friends.
Right.
Somebody has these. This is Versailles.
It's written.
Yeah,
it's the reason that you're here is because of all this. So you need to follow that rule as well. You're kind of hypocritical a little bit.
Also, the king gave her a little retreat called the Petit Trianon.
Oh, I want to go there.
Isn't it beautiful? To get away from the formality of the court. And he knew that it wasn't to her liking. And honestly, they had their own interests. He wanted to hunt. She wanted to
lay around in the grass all day and pick daisies and milk the
and
goats
dance and
frolic and wear less restrictive garments.
She actually did change fashion about this time, a few years into being a mother. Changed her clothes into a more romantic style, less layers, less corsetry, easier to move around. Now, still in these days, we would have thought it was a lot of clothes.
Right.
Back then, I mean, it was just less restrictive.
It was like stripping down to your bikini.
There is a phenomenon called, I can't even, pardon my French if I pronounce it wrong, but nostalgie de la boue, which means like nostalgia for the mud. All across the country, aristocratic women were erecting these little hamos or hamlets, where they would hire peasants to do things like bathe the pigs and tie ribbons on their tails.
Just their little playhouses.
Wash the eggs. It was little play villages where they could go and experience real life, but like, okay.
Yeah, real life clean.
Oh, completely clean. They had a lady who baked bread all day, every day, in case the queen and her friends stopped by. The smell of bread would be wafting through the air. And
it's like having your house staged all the time.
Oh, yes.
It looks optimal.
And isn't this cute and blah, blah, blah. Which is really, I mean, it is kind of, ooh, that's kind of snotty.
But in one regard, I think it would be kind of cool to have.
Yeah.
Like your house that is exactly the way that you want it and as natural as you want it and the way that you idealize. Is that a real word?
That would be the Trianon, I think. Yeah. She turned the Trianon into her own little private retreat. The Hameau was just like a peasant cottage village where you could pretend to be a peasant. I'm like, oh,
Disneyland.
It was like a Disneyland Hameau village. Oh my goodness. Now, about this time, along comes a Swede named Axel von Fersen. Now, did they or didn't they? The world will never know for sure.
No. I like to think they did.
But I'm thinking, you know, historians pretty much categorically say no. Now, he did come back.
Historians say no, but Susan says, I think they did.
And Beckett says, well, it was lovely in the movie.
Yes,
it was lovely. Really cool.
Although I couldn't get over the fact that she was cheating on her husband, so I had a hard time lovelycizing it from that regard. But
I seriously think that just
hot sweet
on.
And
yeah.
Wow.
I just think the cheating on one's husband was just... She needed to be careful if she did, because really, without a boy or two in the nursery, I think you're playing with fire. You know, the heir to the throne couldn't be a von Fersen.
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
I never quite understood how they didn't. I mean, I wonder how many royals are passed off, but they're not really blood, I mean, in the history of the world.
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know about, I would think that a queen would be pretty circumspect, and other nobles, like, until you had, and this will come up in a later podcast, but they always called it an heir and a spare, and once mm-hmm. you had an heir and a spare, it was kind of like, well, you know, the later ones, who cares, you yeah. know, I'll bring them off, okay. whatever.
But they could be 15th child, and oh, or 16th, and end up like,
Well, so let's just call Axel von Fersen an unconfirmed. He does try to save her later. He does try to save her later. So, you know, there might be maybe a romance that never mm-hmm. blossomed.
Some connection. Some connection. Obviously, they yeah. had some connection.
So, Marie Antoinette ultimately had 4 children, unlike the movie where they inexplicably left out the older
boy. Yes, they left out a child.
So, I don't know. The Dauphin of France, the older boy, ended up dying at about the age of 7, I believe, of tuberculosis.
I think that's what I...
Completely heartbreaking, I can't imagine. The Dauphin, that's an interesting title, because it means dolphin.
Mm-hmm.
And where that came from
is...
I found this out. In medieval times, there was a man who had a lord, let's call him, you know, back in medieval times there weren't like, you know, the dukes and all this, let's call him an earl, for lack of a better term, although he wasn't really called an earl. He was a lord who had a manor, and it was very, you know, feudal. And so he sold his fiefdom to the crown with the stipulation that the crown prince always be referred to as the Dauphin, because that was the symbol this man had on his coat of arms.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Dauphin throughout history in France from then has always had a dolphin on his coat of arms.
Very interesting.
So that's where that came from. I always thought that's very strange title. Hello, and I'm the Dauphin.
I'm the Dauphin.
So as the vitriol started to spread around her about this time, my goodness, did the rumors start to fly. People in the nobility who were offended at not being invited to the Trianon, not being included in events, not being told information anymore because of the coterie of friends, and then Louis' advisors kept it all to themselves, too. So it mm-hmm. happened both on both ends. The nobility felt left out of everything, angry. And so angry coworkers, think about angry yes. coworkers, will go tell your boss or their friends or Facebook, whatever they right. want about you. I mean, it starts to be like, if you don't kiss the booties they need to be kissed,
right.
they will turn on you. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what started to happen.
Yeah, well, life is kind of like that still a little bit. So it's just apparently human nature.
So things started to leak out, and like that telephone game started to get destroyed and turned about, and rumors started to spread that she was having affairs with her friend Princess de Lamballe,
mm-hmm.
and that she was having affairs with her husband's brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Not true, not true. We know that she's a sweet person who just doesn't have a clue about what's going on, and why would she? She's never lived as a real peasant.
That's the world that she came from.
She came from one royal house into another.
Right.
It's kind of inexcusable in a ruler not to be connected to the common people, but really, at that time, it wasn't unusual for someone not to know.
Right, right.
And she was more clueless than most. So
and
really,
the communication of the times was not the communication of these times.
So, really, I just think she did the best she could. So, so the vicious cartoons and the vicious, like, vitriol, the populace started to turn against her, very much against her. She got the title of Madame Deficit. They started to blame her for, there was a crop failure a couple years before the revolution that, how did they blame her for the crop failure? Bread prices rose,
right.
and it was her fault for spending too much on clothes.
Right.
Basically. So really, that she became the scapegoat.
And that's the information that's still left, which is why mm-hmm. things like...
Yeah, let them eat cake.
Cake.
Yeah.
Attributed to her.
It's just really not in character at all.
Mm-hmm.
At all. That's, like, the thing people know about
yes.
her. So
it's not true.
Not true that she said, don't let them eat cake. So she tried to counter with her own propaganda. She had a very famous painter, Vigée Le Brun, paint her a picture with her children, her 4 at the time children, including baby Sophie. The painting was hung. The mm-hmm. painting was taken down, and baby Sophie was painted out because she died. So Sophie died, then the Dauphin died. We got that a little out of order. And then, so she's left with 2 children, her oldest, Marie-Thérèse, and a young Dauphin of France. So, and that's what the movie shows, is those 2 children. They just kind of left out
the other kids. Right, they left out the other kids, right.
Yeah. So, That propaganda was kind of a little bit too late.
Too little,
too late. Trying to, you know, promote herself as a mother. She was actually accused of indecency with Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm like, yeah, okay. You know what really, might have hurt France and its economic woes more than anything Marie Antoinette could have spent upon is France was very instrumental in helping the Americans win the revolution against the British.
Mm-hmm.
Some of Louis' advisors thought it was the best use of the money. They said, raise taxes to raise this money. Won't it be a slap in the face to the British? That's a pretty expensive price to pay.
Yeah.
For a little bit of ha-ha.
Ha-ha.
Because really, that's
a really expensive price to pay.
And also, a war that they had fought right before Marie Antoinette and he got married, that actually made Austria and France friends again, was a very expensive, debt-ridden war. So that debt was still, having to be paid off. And then they basically financed the American Revolution. And those two things together really had a disastrous effect on the French economy.
Right.
It's bad, and when the economy's bad, people look for someone to blame, and they started to blame Marie Antoinette.
Her, who needed a figurehead. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the storming of Versailles and travels to Paris.
Okay, so we've gotten to what, unfortunately, is the not-so-good ending.
Very sad.
The last chapter of her life. Okay, so here we are back at Versailles, the jewel box of a palace, which is not secure at all. As you recall, any commoner that felt like walking up could just walk up. It was guarded by the Swiss guards, theoretically, but really, it was a very, very insecure palace. And a whole mob of people. After the storming of the Bastille, which was a prison in Paris, the mood was bad. It was just not good. And revolution had been brewing for some time, and it had just escaped. I tell you, we're going to kind of skate over a lot of the events of the revolution. They're very, very findable, searchable online if you want to know exactly the details that happened. We're going to skate over a lot of it just because...
Hour in itself, or even longer.
So, suffice to say, it started with the storming of the Bastille, which is what they celebrate in every French restaurant in America on the 14th of July.
Oh, they celebrate in France, too.
Yeah, so,
and I have opposing views of Bastille Day. I think it's a wonderful celebration of the liberation of a country, and Beckett.
I just think it's like a marking of some unnecessary cruelty on the part of some mobs, but... I'll have a drink on that day, but for a whole other reason.
I'll have a french fry. Just kidding.
Complete.
Complete.
Okay, so, the Bastille has been stormed. Things are on. A whole mob of people are marching down the road. It's only 20 miles, and if you're determined and full of anger and, adrenaline.
That's less than a marathon.
Really, yeah. And if you're really angry, you can make it, So this whole mob of people storm Versailles. Some parleying, there's some breaking in, there's some chasing of people throughout the palace, and ultimately, the end result is the mob forces them to go, the royal family, to go to Paris, where they can be kept under greater control. They are taken to the Palace of the Tuileries, which is, they kept one apartment there for when they went to Paris to go to the opera or whatever, but the main occupants, honestly, were the servants and their families who had basically squatted there. I mean... It's an occupied palace. Why wouldn't you? The owners never come. Let's just live here, like kings and queens.
And if they show up, we have a purpose.
Yeah, yeah. So they get there. They're under the eyeballs. They're right in the main. The king is suffering from severe depression. Severe depression at this point, which everyone takes the opportunity to say is drunkenness. It just doesn't get better for the rumor mill. Marie Antoinette is accused of poisoning the king so she can put his brother on the throne, and she's been sleeping with his brother, and that's why she wants to kill the king, and that's why he acts like that. It is just, they can't win. There's no winning. So finally, after trying...
Which is probably why he had severe depressed state.
Oh my gosh.
There's no out.
There is no out.
There's no way. Even in your wildest imagination, you can't. And he wasn't a political mastermind anyway.
No. And he, he's been ill-advised this whole time, and he is not a good decision-maker, and he just knows he's in over his head. He's making concession after concession, and, he's giving inches, and they're taking more inches, and it just really... He's ineffectual. He's completely... Marie Antoinette actually has become more politically active these last few years, but it's just another case of too little, too late. Mm-hmm. She has some influence on appointments and things, but it's just too late. There was an escape attempt headed, actually, by, you'll recall this name, Axel von Fersen. Came riding in.
Swoon.
I know, on his white horse.
Italian.
And this and that, and, you know, basically, bumbling doofus King Louis again. Couldn't decide who was supposed to go. What kind of carriages? Who was authorized to go? What were they going to take? Dithering.
Honestly, they got lost in the details.
Yeah, they got caught up with and brought back, and that was just not good. And then they got put in jail. And honestly, there was a completely sham trial of Louis almost immediately after that. He was given some time to prepare a case, but you know what the
end result. What kind of a case could he possibly present?
Yeah.
That they would buy. It's.
And it was just basically just, I just want to say, it was like mob rule.
Mm-hmm.
There were some intellectuals at the head of it that had some good, you know, ideals and some good goals. But honestly, it kind of devolved to just a witch hunt. It was just a witch hunt. A scapegoat hunt, a witch hunt. Not good. So Louis, let's just cut to that. He's cut to it. He's gone. He's gone. They take him to the guillotine, which is, I'm sure you've all seen it. It's a big framework with a big old... blade.
I think everyone's seen a guillotine, but I think the background of the guillotine is actually a little interesting.
Yes.
Just real quickly.
There was and this guillotine was invented as a more humane way to execute criminals, because really before that what you had was an axe man, and was the axe man in a good mood? Had he had some drinks? Did he have good aim? Was it his first day on the job? You just didn't know. You didn't know what you were going to get. And your hope was for a quick death, but honestly, a lot of times it didn't happen.
Could be a hack job.
So really, this was...
the guillotine.
It was invented to make it a little more linear, you know. You knew what the result was going to be, but the ease of killing people really contributed to quite a few... executions that might not have happened had they had to have an axe man on the premises.
Because they chopped off the first head, said, hey, that was really cool, let's line them up.
Yeah, it just wasn't good. There was
two again. It's a toy. It's a bunch of men and their toys is what it was.
Oh, it was not good. So,
Dr. Guillotin, or that was his name, did not, in fact, invent the guillotine, but he was such an advocate for this humane way to dispatch criminals that invariably became associated with his name. And he did not, in fact, die on the guillotine, as the popular rumor is. He died as an old man in his own bed. But he did regret that his active campaigning for such an easy execution method did lead to some atrocities during the French Revolution.
Yeah, so she is in jail with her daughter and her son, and her husband's youngest sister, Elizabeth, is there with them. She is a member of the royal family, after all. And, this is the part. As the mother of a small child, I just can't bear it. They take the little son away, who's, I think he's 8 years old, almost immediately, and separate him from his mother. And he is within hearing of his mother. And they put him in the care of this roughshod cobbler shoemaker guy who's really uncouth, and they try to teach him the ways of the revolution and to denounce his parents and royalty, and you know, he's only 8, and they try to get him to get convinced that his mother had taken indecent liberties with him, which is just and after so much torture and badgering, you know, I think the child will say anything to get them
to
just stop, to lay off of him. But he just cried and cried, and here's his mother listening to her little boy crying, and she can't do a thing about it. And it's 8 months of that. Oh my God.
Living in horrible conditions and listening to that on top of it.
And just one by one, the privileges go. I mean, the clothes aren't replenished, the linen's not washed, the furniture gets diminished. It's just like, just this slide into just hell.
Despair.
Just despair. She is put on trial that is even more of a sham trial than ever before. And they put this thing in trial. They put this thing against her that she had taken indecent liberties with her son. And she laid it on all the mothers in the courtroom. Like, really? Could any mother
do that?
Commit this unnatural act? And the women in the courtroom were actually turned around more toward her side. But you know what? It didn't matter.
Nope.
It was a defiant.
She was guilty walking in the door.
And yeah, it was just a sham.
Of something.
So his poor, helpless mother, her hair was cut off. She was taken in a, they call it a tumbrel. It's like a wagon with a cage on top, basically. Good times with big wooden wheels. Everyone was spitting on her, and
far from the carriage she rode into France on.
Oh, my goodness. What a far cry from the 53 carriages. You know, there had been thoughts all along that Austria might try to save the royal family. It just didn't, none of the plans came to fruition. That was it. In her last words, she stepped on the executioner's foot and said, "Pardon me, monsieur, I do not do it on purpose." And that's the last thing she ever said. And she was, her head was cut off. She was 34 years old. And that's the end of her life.
Clearly not her legacy.
Clearly not her legacy.
She's obviously an important woman in history.
Her daughter survived. Her son died 2 years later. Jail fever is what they called it. It could have been tuberculosis. I don't know. There was a rash afterward of fake dauphins that came out, you know, that had said, "Oh, I'm the lost dauphin. I escaped," and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, before DNA evidence, they had a lot of credence. They were examined and proven false.
Right.
The thing is, something that endured, the doctor, during his autopsy, stole the child's heart.
That's right.
As a souvenir. He had it for a long time. It passed to one of his students. Knocked around in the medical community in France for some time. And in 2004, the heart is in a crystal jar.
It's in a jar.
Exhibited, dried, in a crystal jar.
Eight or nine-year-old heart is sitting there.
His heart is in a jar. I'm horrified to even think about this. But they did use...
So horrified that there will be a link.
We're going to put a link to that picture. It's finally been put to rest in Saint-Denis, which is where his parents are. Marie Antoinette was actually thrown in a mass grave unceremoniously after her execution, but they did exhume her body, and she is in state now. Basically, they are portrayed as victims of the revolution, and they have great statues to them, and their son is reunited with them now, which the DNA evidence from the heart, they determined that the person that was reputed to go into the grave was, in fact, the dauphin. He had died.
Right. Contrary to all the rumors, there was something about him becoming a shoemaker.
Yeah.
And, you know, and living out his life.
The daughter is technically the last queen of France, although she never reigned, through
20 minutes.
Yeah. Through a series of events that we will not go into here, there was an emperor, there was not, there was the restoration of the monarchy. It was just very complicated. But so technically, her daughter, Maria Therese, was the last queen of France. That's just a technicality.
Long enough for her husband to sign the papers and abdicate.
Yeah. Really, what we're going to leave you with is Marie Antoinette in pop culture today, much to my horror, you know this is going to horrify me, at like Archie McPhee or one of those websites, I'll have to provide a link in the show notes, you can buy a Marie Antoinette action figure where the head comes off.
Lovely.
Oh, that's not very tasteful.
But we would rather do something like redecorate our laundry room and hang a crystal chandelier in it and paint it a blue, colorful cornflower blue with lots of white and gold accents.
Now, I must recommend, although many disagree with me, Sofia Coppola's movie Lost in Translation. Not Lost in Translation.
Completely Lost in Translation.
Completely Lost. Her movie Marie Antoinette. Actually, that is interesting. There is a Lost in Translation connection because due to that movie, Sofia Coppola's Lost in Translation, she was allowed to film Marie Antoinette at Versailles.
And that, I think, is the most interesting. The dialogue in the movie is very limited.
Yeah.
But the visuals of it are just give a good feel for the period, and it's actually in Versailles.
Yeah.
So it's not a set that recreates Versailles. It is Versailles.
Yeah, and that is amazing. And we'll put a link to that movie's website, and we'll also put a link up to Versailles, which if you ever get a chance to go, something else I should recommend is Rick Steves is a travel impresario. He has podcasts, he has web TV shows, he has books. So he has a podcast whereupon you can download basically a walkthrough of Versailles. So when you get there, you push play on your iPod and he walks you through Versailles. So I found that quite amazing.
Versailles.
And when you're walking from, you know, the house to the Petit Trianon, they provide appropriate music of the time for
That's
you to
nice.
Listen to while you walk. Do you wear square-toed shoes when you do it?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. That would be awesome.
Nice buckle on them. I bet you have a pair of those, Beckett.
I bet I do, too.
I bet you do.
So, you know, there's all kinds of heiresses to the throne. There's, you know, arguably Lady Gaga, Madonna.
And by heiress, you don't mean the actual.
Oh, no.
There's no linkage.
And as a matter of fact, there are no heirs of Marie Antoinette. Maria Therese, the last surviving child, had no children. So there are no direct descendants of Marie Antoinette left in the world, which is a shame.
It is, kind of. That would be kind of, I don't know, bittersweet to have that tiny little blood connection.
The last book I'm going to recommend is Antonia Fraser's The Journey, which was the book that the movie was based upon.
Right.
Loosely based upon, I should say.
And it is a very rich and colorful history of the woman. Very detailed.
Very thorough.
If you're like me, you have to go back and translate all the Louis XVIs and XIVs, and it takes a while to get through. It's not a light read, but it's very thorough, and it's a great place to start or...
And for a history of Versailles itself, Tony Spofforth, I'll have to put a link too, has written a book called Versailles, The History of a Palace, and it is very interesting how many things. It talks about features that aren't there anymore, and in fact, we're gone by the time Marie Antoinette got there, but it's quite interesting. It talks about the protocol, which always fascinates me,
yes,
and the reason behind it, and, you know, how Versailles came to be, and that's another good read too.
And that's it, from fabulous to tragic in less than an hour.
Tune in next week where we talk about someone who's more famous for living in a log house than a palace.
The music on this podcast comes courtesy of Music Alley. Visit them at music.mevio.com.
For show notes and links to the things we talked about today, please visit us at thehistorychicks.com. Follow us on Twitter at thehistorychicks.
With an X.
Or like us on Facebook without an X. If you liked us in real life, please tell a few friends or leave a review for us on iTunes.